6:09, and we're going to call the public hearing to order. Is there any public comment? And so, this is a public hearing to hear any comments, questions regarding the zoning regulations that were handed over to the select board. I can't remember, November 5. We need to have this hearing before we can adopt those. And so we have several planning commission members here that will answer any questions that the public has. And I think the board would probably let them do that because they, even though I've read it, and I'm sure the other board members have, we figure they know it upside down and backwards. But see, that all but two of the public that are here are planning commission members.
Yeah.
And then Ben was associated with it somewhat, I guess.
I'm the only one.
And so, Alan, do you have any questions?
I'm the only one who wasn't associated with it.
Well, you have to administer it, so maybe your questions are more valid than many others.
Well, I do have some observations. Do you want me to launch into those?
I think that would be great.
All right, I've been through the document. I think the Planning Commission has done a great job with this. And it's a strong document. I think it will give us much more meat to fall back on when we have to make decisions on the ZBA. But I do have two specific things that I want to talk about, but I'm going to wait for that because I want to say something in general about the Zoning Board of Adjustment. I think it should be a very strong and independent committee in the town. I think that the bylaws need to reflect the authority of the ZBA more than they do presently. The ZBA, in a way, the ZBA is not like the Select Board. The Select Board is elected, of course, to represent the town. But when the Select Board appoints people to the ZBA, I think they try to get a cross-section of people who represent the town in a similar kind of way, although it is an appointed committee and not an elected committee. The ZBA is different in that it is a quasi-legal committee, and it has formal standing in the state because of that. When we have hearings, we take sworn testimony from people. We have long deliberations about the cases that we need to deal with. And some of them are fairly tricky. And some of them have some of them involve disputes between neighbors. Most of them don't. I think that the document itself, the zoning bylaws, need a little bit more teeth in representing the authority of the ZBA and also enforcement provisions. Those two things, authority and enforcement. We have the authority to issue legal decisions because the decisions we make become law in the community. These decisions can be appealed, of course, and many of them are. They can be appealed back to the ZBA if there's fresh evidence to consider, or they can be appealed to the Environmental Division of the Superior Court. And there should be avenues for redress when we make a bad decision or when we make a decision that other people don't agree with. I also think, and I think it should be in the document, that decisions of the Zoning Board of Adjustment should not be overruled by any individual. I also think they should not be able to be overruled by any committee of the town, such as the Planning Commission, the Select Board. I think there are avenues for redress through the appeal process, but I do not think that any body or any individual should have the ability to overturn or overrule a decision that we make. And furthermore, I think it can be difficult for any board, like Planning Commission, the Select Board, if you begin to get involved in matters that should be limited to the Zoning Board of Adjustment. I think it can create divisions. I'm not saying that it has, but I think it has the potential to create divisions on a planning commission or on a select board. I think it can create bad feeling. And I think, I just think it's a bad idea. I think when the appeal process is followed, it is a much better route. And I think it should be written into the document, as I said. I have a sentence that I would personally like to see added to the document, and I'll give you a copy of this. The sentence that I would add is this, at the end of section 1.3.2 on page 2 of this document. Section 1.3.2 on page 2. I would add this sentence. Decisions made by the ZBA are final and become law. They may not be overruled by any individual or town board. Decisions may be appealed to the ZBA or to the Environmental Division of the Vermont Superior Court. That is a provision that I would like to see written into the bylaws to give the ZBA more authority, primarily. Now, the other thing I wanted to say is that the matter of enforcement. The ZBA doesn't have any police. We have to rely pretty much on the zoning administrator to make sure that our decisions are carried out. Sometimes it can happen, and it has happened here at the conference, that we make a decision and the party involved does not do what it's supposed to do according to the decision. So what do you do in a case like that? The ZBA needs some kind of enforcement to follow back on. Now, I'll point out that the old bylaws, going back 45 years now, had such a provision about issuing a fine in case one party did not carry out the decision and not do what it was supposed to do. That provision is back in the old document about violations and penalties, but it didn't get carried into this draft. I don't see it in there anywhere. The provision reads like this. Any person who violates any provision of this ordinance will be fined not more than $50 for each day the violation is in effect. Provided, however, that the offender must have had at least 7 days notice that a violation exists. This notice shall be sent to the offender by certified mail. Return receipt requested. So that is another way that the Zoning Board of Adjustment decisions can be enforced. So the gist of what I'm trying to say to you is that I think that the Zoning Board of Adjustments should have as much force recognized in the bylaws and stated in the bylaws as possible, and that there should be some mechanisms for enforcement of our decisions. Recognizing all the time that if we make a bad decision or a decision that's not popular or not accepted in the town, there are avenues for redress by appealing the ZBA itself with new evidence or by going to the Superior Court. And that has also happened in recent years. And we have one case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And that can happen too with a series of appeals. So I'm going to leave you with these two statements that I would like to see added to the bylaws. And you and the Planning Commission, I guess, are going to have to decide whether you want to do it or not. But I'll leave them with you for consideration. So there's a lot of things I want to say, but I think I'll wait to see if anybody else can. I mean, about different matters, not as weighty as what I just talked about. But I'll wait to see if other people want to make comments.
So, I guess I'm trying to understand what you're saying regarding not being overruled or basically being overruled, and I think this stems from the Purple Crayon appeal, and they had the opportunity to appeal, and they chose that opportunity. They didn't choose to come back to you. They were within their legal right to take that opportunity to appeal to the environmental court.
Right, and they did. But let me say something, which is that I did not, definitely did not want to get into any specific cases. I didn't want to relitigate anything here.
I'm not trying to relitigate it, but what you're saying to me is that you feel that this, or what I understood you to say was that the Zoning Board of Adjustment should not be heard, their decisions should not be overturned. That being said, when there is an appeal process and that is followed, that indeed can happen.
They did follow the process.
And so, in essence, your decision was overturned. We don't really, the bylaws, the select board, the planning commission, that's state law. They can do that. How do you anticipate that we can make it so that your decisions can't be appealed and your decisions can't be overruled? I'm trying to understand how you expect that's going to fly.
Well, the appeal process was followed by Purple Crayon in that case, and I really did not want to get into cases. And that appeal didn't work its way through the court. I think it should have.
Let me ask you a question. In the case of my brother, it went to the environmental court, and then they put it back to mediation.
Right.
And so the question I've got is, if the environmental court sends it to mediation, who in the town of Pomfret should be the person that does the mediating? And wouldn't the court, decide that?
Yeah, the court would decide that.
And if the court decided that to be the planning commission, or the court decided it to be the select board, or the court decided it to be the listers, it would be a court decision?
It would be whatever the court asked for.
Right.
Yes. In the case you're bringing up, it didn't get to the Superior Court. The Superior Court in that case may have said, can you negotiate between Purple Crayon and the select board? And that would be appropriate. But that decision would have come from the Superior Court, which didn't happen.
But what happens if you had in the permit that mediation is to be an outside entity paid for by...
All I'm getting at is, I think that's a fine concept, and I understand where you're coming from. But then the mechanics of that is where we may all get tripped up. And so it's great to have that concept, but then there's the mechanics need to be there to allow that to occur. And so I'm asking you, how do you envision that that would happen?
I think the mechanics are there. It's clear. Appeal can be made back to the ZBA with fresh evidence, or the appeal can be made to the Superior Court. The route is there, and I think that it should be followed. And by stating this in the bylaws, I think it gives the ZBA more authority, which I think it needs. To have a viable ZBA that people want to participate in, you know, I have committee members who get unhappy over things like this and talk about leaving the committee. It can be hard sometimes to hold the committee together. But I think that what I'm proposing has a clear avenue to be followed. The court, in this case, had that Purple Crayon appealed the decision and went to the Superior Court. The Superior Court may well have said they want mediation tried between the Select Board and Purple Crayon, and that would be perfectly appropriate. But I think it should follow that route, and the direction, I think, should come from the court, not from an individual or a committee in the town. I'm trying to find ways to give the Zoning Board of Adjustment more authority written in the bylaws and in provisions for enforcement, such as the fine.
I can address the fines side a little bit. In the job description of your zoning administrator is a requirement that the zoning administrator periodically visit conditional use permits. And I'm not so sure that that has been followed, and it means more time on the part of Karen Hewitt to do it and more money. Obviously, it takes time to go and examine and make sure that the permit conditions are lived up to. But she's busy as it is, and somehow she perhaps has to have some assistance there.
Well, or, you know, probably somebody needs to make it a priority of hers. You know,
that
she probably won't do it if she isn't told she should.
Well, it's in her job description that the Planning Commission actually drew up and presented to you. We cannot really do that part of administering it. That's your responsibility. I think that's the way the law is, or the regulation.
I think that people sometimes don't realize that decisions made by the Zoning Board of Adjustment become law in the town unless they're appealed and changed. And I want there to be strong avenues for appealing and for changing decisions if we make a bad decision. And that certainly can happen. We spend a long, long time debating many of these situations that come before the Zoning Board, and we write very carefully reasoned decisions. But according to the state, the decisions we make become law and they set precedents within the community. That's why I feel that they should not be able to be overturned by any individual or any committee. That following the appeal route, which is clearly stated, is the proper route and should be the only route.
Well, they did appeal, and so they did follow the route. They did not come back to you. They went to the court.
Yeah, but they withdrew the appeal.
Pardon?
They subsequently withdrew the appeal. So there was no direction from the court.
They would have required mediation.
Probably. It's a good chance of it, yes. Which is what happened. But my point is, I think it should be arranged by the court and not decided by within the town.
Okay.
So that's why I would like to see those two provisions in the bylaws. I recognize that this is controversial, but I've been doing this stuff for 10 years now, and I've seen a lot of situations come up. And I feel that the Zoning Board of Adjustment is a significant and important committee in the town, and it needs to be recognized as such, and it needs to be supported that way in the bylaws. And this is the opportunity to do it when we're writing new bylaws. I think bylaws are great. They're going to help us a lot. I think the Planning Commission has done a really helpful job. I just wanted to... But a lot in this document has to do with the Zoning Board of Adjustment. And I would like to see that board made, recognized in writing as being important.
You said you had some other comments as well.
I did, on specific items. You want to go to those? Just two.
Well, I wanted to make a couple of comments.
Sure.
Okay. I'll start with the easy one, enforcement. I agree with you. Quite honestly, the select board, we're in the same boat. For example, we had someone who put in a driveway without a permit. Told they needed to get a permit, asked for a permit, got denied. Well, the driveway still sits there. What do we do?
That's why there should be enforcement.
Right. And so I agree with you.
Enforcement,
because anyone can essentially thumb their nose at anything we do in town, I mean, that we have for regulations. Unless there's something, and we can't just make it up and say, well, we're gonna go after these people, because then they can point and say, well, gee, you know, so and so did this, and you let that slide.
Well,
so,
the old bylaws had that paragraph in there about enforcement with a fine, and I think it should be carried into this document.
Well, I'll have to look at it. I looked through that, and we talked about it. And like I said, we're in the same boat, and I understand that, because it's like, why have any rules, right? Because people can do just what they want to do.
And therefore, people will not pay attention to decisions made by the ZBA and maybe in your case by the select board.
Absolutely. It's just like taxes. People would pay taxes if we didn't have a cudgel that we could prompt them with, by taking a property. The other thing, the other issue you talk about, I was certainly highly cognizant of the sticky wicket we were in with the purple crayon thing. And I don't want to relitigate either, but do understand that it was not my desire to drag this out. And I thought that if we did some kind of mediation thing, which lawyers on both sides said, they on both sides, purple crayon and NR, said they're going to look at this and go, you got to do mediation first. So maybe the requirement, I don't know, Scott, you can maybe clarify this. I'm not sure that the court gave us official notice to mediate, but we certainly, took that as an option, because this thing sort of dropped in our laps. And, for the most part, I didn't want any part of it, to tell you the truth.
I don't think it should be dropped in your lap. And I think it has the potential to create conflict and division in your board and maybe in the community, and also the potential to end up spending thousands of dollars on lawyer fees. If the rule were followed, I don't think all those things would happen. If the appeal rule were followed through to the end, at which time the court may have asked you to do the same thing that you did.
But litigants can't be... Purple Crown did what they were allowed to do in that.
Yes.
So there was nothing that could have stopped that. That was a choice a litigant has. And when Frank says it dropped in our lap because it's the select board's responsibility to defend any lawsuits on behalf of the town, there's really no choice. We have to defend it.
That's just the way it works.
That's just the way it goes. They're really, because we did not want to go litigate the case, we didn't want to go to trial, it became a settlement discussion. And so that's how we got to where we were.
Yes, but the select board could have said no.
Could have said no to what?
No to negotiating it.
And then go to trial?
And Purple Crayon, it would have gone to the court.
And we would have gone to trial.
Not necessarily. The court usually asks for mediation first.
Okay, well, either which way, if it didn't go to trial, we would have ended up... Mediation is just another form of settlement.
That's right.
So
it may have ended up... That's what I'm consistently saying. It may well have ended up in the same place. But it would have followed a different route. It would have followed until you got direction from the court.
Well, I think...
Perhaps to do negotiation.
Well, both parties wanted to settle without going to mediation. That was the desire. So... both sides wanted to settle it without having to go to mediation.
But then the select board ends up involving itself in items that are the purview of the zoning board of adjustment.
We would have been involved anyway.
It's in the same place.
We would have been parties to mediation. I mean, the only difference between what we did and formal mediation is we would have had to bring in formal mediators. That's the only difference.
And you do have to understand that even if you go to mediation, it does not mean that an agreement will be had. That each party can still walk out of mediation and say, not going to go there, and go back to court.
Correct.
Whether we made a correct decision or not to follow the path that we did, I can assure you that we didn't enjoy being involved in the procedure. We didn't enjoy spending the money to be involved in the procedure. And we did, at the time, we made the decisions, the best decisions we thought we could make for the town. Can I say that they were 100% right? Probably not. Can I say that they were 100% probably wrong? Probably not. But the bottom line is you make a decision and you do your best, and then you have to move on. Well, and you know,
we did the same.
Nobody wanted them to appeal, but that was their right. And it could have been, had we gone to court, we would have gotten a much less favorable outcome than what we got. I'm not saying, because I don't know. We made choices, and it was not our intent as a board to step on the Zoning Board of Adjustment's toes. We didn't really want anything to do with it at all, but that's our job.
Yeah, I think, you know, I wasn't involved in making the decision that you guys came up with. And I hate to step on anybody's toes, but at some point, you've got to get over that and say what you feel. So if the Zoning Board hadn't come down with just a firm no and done a little more due diligence, in my opinion, from the get-go, we might have not been in this situation either. So if they had asked for some more clarification or something along the lines, said, hey, no, this isn't going to work, why don't we work something out and come back to us, then maybe we could have gotten somewhere and not spent all this money. So.
My answer to that is that Purple Crayon could have appealed back to the ZBA and said, yeah, we thought about this, and we have some different ideas we'd like to present, and we'd like you to consider them. And the ZBA would have considered them.
But that was their choice.
That's right.
The point is, it was not your choice or our choice to make. It was their choice to make as to how they wish to appeal your decision.
You closed the door on your control portion of it when you gave them a firm denial.
And so they chose to go to the environmental court. That was their choice. They didn't have to come back to you first.
All right.
Let
me look more broadly, because we're getting into trying to relitigate this case, and I do not want to do that. The decision was made, and that's over. All I'm asking is for, when you write up the final document here, to think about this matter of jurisdiction and authority. And it's a tricky question. I understand the comments. I recognize that this is controversial, as I said before, and I recognize your point of view, and I think you recognize my point of view, and it's a difficult area, and if it can somehow be specified more clearly in the bylaws, I think it would help your committee and my committee, and I don't know whether you can find a way to do that. I offered a suggestion in what I gave you, and you'll have to decide whether you want to put that in or not, or come up with some other suggestion. But I'm trying to look at a broader picture here and not talk about this case.
Can I just say one thing? Isn't what you're asking for part of the state statute? If Karen Hewitt does a permit for a house, there's an appeal period, and then you give a decision, there's an appeal period, and you have to state in your decision that they have a period of time to appeal it to the environmental court. So that's all state statute. Really sort of takes it out of our hand.
They have 15 days to appeal back to the ZBA if they wish, and 30 days to appeal to the environmental court.
And that's statute.
Yeah. That's Vermont law.
Right.
But in the meantime, the decision that we made becomes the law in the community. Until either they appeal the process to us and we write a new decision, or until they appeal it to the environmental court, and the environmental court moves the case forward one way or another, often by mediation.
Okay, so I guess it's just a process thing that you're
it's
after.
A process.
It's a process thing, because the way you started in the beginning, you said no other committee should be able to overturn us, or group or board, which seems, you know, that's again shutting the door. Perhaps your wording should be that under direction of the, if it goes to the environmental court, under the direction of the environmental court, such and such will happen. So see what I mean? Because what you sort of came and said, I don't want anybody second guessing our thing, and nobody has the authority to do that. But then you admit that, you know, the court can tell us. So I think if we can word it so you can, so that perhaps the requirement is that the court has a say or whatever, it's still going to drop back to the selectmen.
That's the appeal that I am advocating.
Right. So So I guess what I'm getting at is, I'm not sure, I got to have a look at the words again, but, you know, to
take those to nuance.
I mean, I see your point, but I
there may well be a better way to word it than what I did.
There's a maxim, though, that's important to keep in mind here. That is, an ordinance applies to the public, and a policy applies within government. And so if the language, and not being familiar with the language you've offered, the question that needs to be asked is whether there's agreement that that language is language people want to live by, is incorporating it into an ordinance that applies to the public the right place for that language. Because we have to bear in mind that ordinances are not meant to be agreements between branches of town government. So I think what you're advocating is some sort of policy agreement between different branches of local government, but doing that within an ordinance that applies to the public at large is not the place to do it.
Is there a better place?
It would need to be formalized in some external policy agreement. But
do we have such a thing?
There are memorandums of understanding, there are policy documents that can be drafted, but you need to bear in mind ordinances apply to the public. They are not meant to apply between branches of government.
Okay.
Yeah, and with that, I'm a little confused, but again, it's, you know, your thing says decisions made by the ZBA are finally become law, and they may not be overruled by any individual or town board, and then that's that. And so that would preclude, if we made that, that would preclude anybody in town, if the environmental court came back, I mean, if you do this to what you've written, the environmental court could come back and say, well, we want this mediated by the select board, and you could just point this and say, well, no board can do it because we've got this law.
So that statement is inadequate if you're right.
So that's what I'm getting at.
Something needs to be added such that you follow the direction of the court. That was my That was my belief.
Okay. Well, I understand. You know, I understand what you're trying to say. I think you just. I'm not, you know, to Scott's point, I'm not astute enough to know whether or not something like that should be in the zoning laws.
Again, you have to keep in mind that there are two categories of documents within town government: policies and ordinances. Ordinances apply to the public. Policies apply within town government.
That's a good point, I think. I made my point here. I don't need to say anything
sure.
else.
So back to, I just want to circle back to enforcement. Do you have any, because the problem is we got a bunch of things in town that need to be enforced. You know, ZBA matters, driveway permits, what's helping with something else that where we've had a hitch and needed, you know, people just trying to think of other things, but there are other things that
there are highway ordinances.
Yeah, highway ordinances and things like that, which, you know, the driveway thing falls under, where, you know, we don't have any enforcement, so that sort of needs to be a goal. And I actually had that as a goal one time, was to work on the enforcement part, because people really do. We have no avenue to make them do it, and I don't feel that we should make up rules case by case, because that, you know, not equitable.
Well, I feel like giving you a good statement about enforcement there from the old document, 45-year-old zoning bylaws, and maybe it can be improved. I thought it was a good statement done back in 1975.
Yeah, I mean, we have the ability to adopt penalty provisions as part of ordinances. So we have that. I don't think we've done much of it.
No.
But I think there are some default, if I recall correctly, there are some default civil penalties that exist in statute. So even if we don't have local penalties, there are, again, I'm just going on recollection, I think there are state statutes that, if necessary, you can kind of find one that applies, and they are kind of default civil fines that can be imposed.
Yeah.
Well, we ran into that scenario. I think we had the wandering steer incident a couple of years ago, and it was a repeat offender kind of situation, and I think we briefly talked about imposing civil fine. And there are, for example, there are state statutes on the books that say you can impose a certain civil fine for wandering
dogs. Is another one.
Well, without enforcement, you have a much weaker committee, and so do we.
Well, weaker boards, and so I guess what I'm getting at is I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
We need to work.
Yeah, it's just
on
adopting those provisions,
adopting some enforcement.
Right. I didn't see anything in the draft document, which is why I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah.
About enforcement for a select board or for ZBA.
Right. Or for Karen.
And planning commission. I'm going to come back to you. I think you've got to budget more money for her services just from the enforcement point of view, especially with conditional use permits. Mm-hmm. You know, past it's kind of issued permits, going unless somebody in the public complains about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How many are there of those?
The draft that you've got has, it doesn't say a dollar figure, Alan, for fines.
Yes,
but no, the draft
says $50.
The old one. The new ordinance has an enforcement and penalty section. It just points to the state statute. Because the state statute controls.
I saw that it was in there, but it's not clear and easy to understand in there. It refers you to obscure laws that most people are not going to know. They're going to know when they see that statement. But I'm very aware of that, and I read that statement, but I thought it was not. I thought it was muddy.
The commission had the full text of the statute in there at one point. You remember when it was taken out and just...
Well, I think it was
taken out. So,
$100 fee.
If the state statute changes and then there's a discrepancy, then you should go back and amend it here. So, we thought that the fine whole thing would be the state statute, and the select board may decide to change the fines from time to time. And if you put it hard here,
right?
Then
that makes sense.
Yeah. So,
just from there, at a risk of putting words in the planning commission's mouth. They generally went to matters of process, which I don't think you're talking about appeals and enforcement and penalties. I think the commission really punted to the state statute because the state statute provides very little discretion to municipalities about what rules they can or cannot adopt. So rather than recite all of that in the ordinance, which is already pretty long at 50, 60 pages, when it comes to just process-related subjects like appeals and penalties and enforcement, it just says see the state statute.
Is there a dollar?
As opposed to in the statute, I think it's up to 200 at the discretion of the enforcement agent. But as to matters of substance, which I think your other comments are on, where there's a lot more discretion, that's where the planning commission sort of went to greater length to write it up in full, in full text.
Well, I did read that, and to me it's not clear. I mean, it is clear what it says, but it means that someone who wants to find out the penalty is going to have to do a lot of research work to go dig it out. That says it. It's a heck of a lot clearer.
Yeah. If you follow the state statute, though, it changes. If it changes one way or the other from what you have, you don't ever have to worry about being on the wrong side of things. You adopt the state, whatever the state statute is at the time.
My understanding, one of the reasons for the urgency of this new ordinance is that the existing one is pretty far out of compliance with current state law.
Parts of it are, yes.
You're talking 24 VSA 4451, is that the one?
And 4452.
Well, if you feel that enforcement is sufficient in there, go with it, I'd say.
Well, I think Ben's right, and John's right, and it's better to incorporate it by reference rather than adopting, and I don't know that we can adopt a standalone.
I think you could only do a lesser fine. You could say the fine's up to 100 or up to 150. You couldn't say we can impose a $500 fine because the statute says you can only do
for the same
200
same
or other remedies if the same statute doesn't say you can impose.
Right.
But people who are wondering about enforcement are going to read that statement that's in there. I don't know what their response is going to be.
You could do a fact sheet.
It's not very clear.
A separate fact sheet on the website. website. I know the town plan has a community reminder about minding your P's and Q's.
It's no difference than driving down the road and going over the speed limit. You know you're not supposed to do it, but you don't know what you're going to get fined when the officer stops you. I mean, well, it's no different.
But, I can't argue with that.
But the question, whether it's stated in the zoning ordinance or not, those statutory penalties and remedies are available, right? That, I mean, you don't have to incorporate them to have them be available.
I don't know if you have to mention them in the ordinance or not. I don't think you don't need to state them in verbatim.
You don't need to say, and penalties will be enforced pursuant to, you know. And if you don't say that, there aren't penalties.
You're probably right. You don't have to say that. But then I think Alan's concern is even stronger.
Right.
In that not only are you not saying the dollar amount, you're not providing a way for the reader to learn what the...
Sure.
Right.
No, I understand.
Should be at least reference or you'll find it.
Well, with the driveway situation you brought up, you had a remedy in there all along. In the 1975 bylaws, you could have fined that person $50 a day after you gave them a week's notice. The remedy was right there.
Okay. Well, I wasn't aware of that.
I'd just like to make this comment that I think most people in this town want to work together with the select board or the fining agency. The select board is the one that administers the fines. And the enforcement issue is not necessarily a fine. The enforcement issue could be working together with the violator and having them come into compliance. It seems to me that people would rather work together to get into compliance than necessarily hit them up with a fine. There haven't been a lot of fines administered that I know about in many, many years. And so the enforcement is not just the fine, but carrying one over, talking to the person and bringing into compliance.
Yeah, just because it permits you to fine somebody doesn't mean you need to.
You can fine somebody. That's work. I don't know.
Bobby Heron would say his professional work, a major portion of his time is working with contractors or developers to bring them into compliance.
Oh, yeah. Well, bring them into compliance.
As long as you're going in the right direction.
Yeah,
that's the goal.
Well, that is the goal. It isn't an income source.
The
goal is to get them to do what they're supposed to be doing.
When they don't.
Well, thanks for bringing that up, Alan.
Okay.
Helps.
Do you want me to mention the other two things I had?
Yes.
10 minutes. I may be missing something, but I still think there's a confusion about signs in here, which I brought up when we met 4 or 5 months ago. And the confusion I'm seeing is this. In the overview, opening section on page 4, it says signs shall not exceed 6 square feet. But if you go on to the section on general standards, which starts on page 15, there's a statement under number 10, signs. This is on page 18. It says a sign shall not exceed 16 square feet in any zoning district. So you got one statement in there that says 6 square feet, and many pages later, there's another statement that says 16 square feet. And we have dealt with the square footage on signs in several situations. And we need to have a standard that we can apply here. Because if somebody comes in with a 10 or 12 foot sign, we'll probably go with the big one. We'll say, okay, you can have it because it goes up to 16 feet.
Is that a typographical error?
I think we've got to research that to be sure on that. I think it's a good
one got added or left out.
I think I think I can answer this. The first provision you mentioned is in the exams section. Mm-hmm. So if a sign is less than 6 square feet,
yes,
and otherwise doesn't violate any other part of the ordinance, they don't need a permit at all, either from the not from the ZBA, not from the zoning administrator. It's totally exempt from the ordinance. If they go above 6 feet, the second provision we're looking at is one of the general standards. And a sign larger than 6 up to 16 would need to be, we need to obtain a permit first.
You mean the CBA could give them permission to put up a 16 square foot sign? I mean, we turned one down a few months ago. It was 24.
Someone needs to give them a permit. I don't know if it's the ZA or if it comes to the ZBA, but yes.
That's a standard for all the general standard for all development.
Yeah, so it's not so a typo.
It's a permit.
It's not a typo, it's a different threshold of review. But below 6, no review, up to 16, permit required.
But who gives the approval?
That would be
either the ZBA or the ZA.
Well, we've been ZBA, we've been on the impression we could not give approval for anything over 6 square feet.
Well, that's under the current.
This may be the new part of the ordinance.
Yeah, what was the page number 18?
Yeah, it's on page 18. It's my printout here.
It's number G.
Yeah.
On 10.
It says it shall not exceed 16 square feet.
I think that's a waiver by the.
I may well have missed something here, or maybe it's okay, but when I read this, I got these two figures, and I can't sort it out in my mind which one the ZBA should follow, or an individual.
I don't know the answer to who has to grant the permit. I guess I don't know if it's the ZA or the ZBA, but that's the distinction. It's not a typo. It's two different standards.
So maybe there's a way to clarify this when you're working on the draft. If the ZBA is to approve it, we need to know whether we can approve beyond 6 feet.
Well, it says on number 10 at the very beginning of that section, the reaction, construction, relocation, or enlargement of a sign visible from outdoors, other than those specified as exempt under section 1.4, which is your 6 square feet, shall require conditional use approval by the zoning board of adjustment prior to permitting. Signs, including exempt signs, shall conform to the following requirements listed below. And that goes to all of your signs. So the way I would read this to be is that if I have a sign, if I wish to put up a sign larger than 6 square feet, then I'm going to have to go to you for an exemption for a conditional use. And if it's over 16 square feet, then you probably aren't going to give it to me. Because that's at the end of that, that's one of the conditions of that you are bound by in your conditional use permit. I could be wrong, but that's how I would read it. It's just a person going to get a permit.
Are you saying that it would be okay for somebody then to come and ask for a 14 square foot sign?
Yes.
Well, the way I read this, and I didn't write it, but the way I read it, I would assume that this means that if it were greater than 6 square feet, but 16 square feet or less, that a conditional use permit would be required.
Okay, so this is a big change from the previous zoning regulations. At that time, 1975, I guess the towns wanted all signs to be pretty small, 6 square feet. But it sounds like this document is giving us permission to allow people to have a much bigger sign, which maybe the town wants and maybe the town doesn't. I personally think 6 square feet is too small. I'd like to see signs a little bigger.
That was a comment that Lois Abel made at the hearing that we had. She thought we should increase that, and we thought rather than increase it as an exempt sign, we didn't want to do that, but that we would increase it under your ZBA authority.
So between 6 and 16 feet, the ZBA can have input onto, you know, how the sign looks. You know, does it fit within the character of the town? Well, it's exactly. If it does, then they can approve it if they feel. And if, you know, somebody has some wild, wacky something, then you can say, no, you can't do that. You need to do this. It's like,
all right. So I think what I'm hearing is that the ZBA, with these bylaws, has permission to give signs up to 16 square feet. If it's, we feel that it's appropriate and tasteful.
Yes.
All right. Okay, great. I like it. All right, the other thing I wanted to mention is a hypothetical, and I don't know how to do something about this, but I've been waiting for this to happen before the ZBA, and it hasn't happened yet. It's about smoke pollution. You have quite a bit in here about light pollution, which is great. That gives us a lot to work with. And you have a statement about noise pollution. what happens if Mr. X decides he's going to build a wood-burning furnace and he puts it, say, 10 yards away from a property line, and Mr. X gets his heat, and that's great, but the prevailing winds blow the smoke.